Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Before we begin the formal part of our proceedings, we begin by asking the community a question. The question is, how are the children? And that the reason we ask this question is that when the children in a community are well, the community tends to be well, too. So it's important that we keep focused on the issues about our children and young people, because they are not only our future, but they are present as well. So each week we invite someone in to talk to us about issues regarding young people. And today we have Elijah Taylor. And Elijah, could you and your big brother, Anthony, please come forward? Before you begin, Elijah, Anthony, could you introduce yourself and tell us about that uniform you're wearing?
My name is Anthony Braxton. I work for the Portland Fire Bureau. Been with the Bureau for about 4 years now.
And what's the program you're involved with Elijah?
I'm involved with Big Brothers Big Sisters here in the Portland metro area. So we've been partnered up since about August.
We appreciate that. Thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you.
Elijah, how are you today?
Good.
Are you nervous?
No.
Good for you. I like that. Well, Elijah, we ask you to talk with us about whatever is important to you.
Okay. My name is Elijah Taylor, and I live in the David Douglas District area. Some things I like about Portland is that there's community sports, and I like that because I can play basketball and football, and I also like having a big brother because that's kind of fun to, like, do things with him in the city and stuff. Some concerns I have is that not enough elementary schools have clinics in them. Like, I went to Lincoln Park Elementary School, and they had a clinic, and that helped me out a lot.
Good. That's very important to make sure that in a clinic, a medical clinic, to help you with tummy aches and toothaches and things like that.
Yeah.
Good. Says that you like to play football, wrestle, and play other sports.
Yes, I do.
Which one's your favorite?
Football.
Football.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get to be as big as Anthony, what do you want to do?
Play football.
Well, of course. Well, Elijah, thank you very much for coming in today. And I really very pleased to have you here.
Thank you.
So, and thank you, Anthony, for what you do for our young people.
Thank you.
Thanks. Let's give this young man a hand. City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams. Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Sten.
Here.
Potter.
Here.
I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which entity he or she is representing. Please start with communications, the first of 229.
Request of Adrian Martinez to address council regarding peace in his profession. I don't see.
Okay, please call the next.
230. Request of Robert Butler to address council regarding failure of the Portland Police Bureau.
I don't see Mr. Butler either. Okay, we'll move to the consent agenda. Please call the vote.
Do you want to see if anyone wants anything to be pulled?
Oh, I'm sorry. Any commissioners wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Does anybody in this audience wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Please call the vote.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye.
Please read the 9:30 time certain.
Agenda item 231, assess benefited properties for street improvements in the Lentz 3, Southeast 104th, and Ramona Local Improvement District.
Mr. Adams is absent today, but we will hear from the staff about this issue.
All three of them, right? Do you want to read all three? Mayor, he'd like to read the other two also.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, please read the other two as well.
232, assess benefited properties for street improvements in the Lentz 233, Extension Local Improvement District. 233, assess benefited properties for street improvements in the Southeast Ellis Street Local Improvement District.
Thank you, Carla. Good morning, council members. I'm Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. With me this morning are, from left to right, are Dave Nunnemaker, Stormwater Design Engineer for the Bureau of Environmental Services, Phil Villanueva, Senior Engineer for the Bureau of Water Works, and on my right is John Jansons with the Portland Development Commission. They're all joining me this morning at the request of Commissioner Adams' office, which requested that I briefly highlight the inter-bureau collaboration in collaboration with the Portland Development Commission on this innovative Green Street project. Carla, if we could just switch to the presentation. Here is a map of the three LIDs for which we are holding a final assessment hearing today. The core project, the Lent 3 Southeast 104th and Ramona LID, is in green, the largest LID here in the area. The next project approved by council was the Lent 3 Extension LID in blue, and the last of the three projects approved by council was the Southeast Ellis Street LID, shown in red. All three of these LIDs are in the area roughly bounded by Southeast Herald Street on the north, Southeast Foster Road on the south, Beggar's Tick Marsh on the east, and a few blocks east of Interstate 205 on the west. And this area is poised to capitalize on the investments currently being made in the nearby Lentztown Center, as well as the Interstate 205 MAX line under construction. Just walking through this a little bit, we combine construction of these three projects to minimize cost and to fully leverage opportunities to revitalize this neighborhood as a whole. This project would not have been possible without the teamwork of other city infrastructure bureaus, including Environmental Services and Water Works, as well as the funding partnership with the Portland Development Commission. When we first looked at doing this project, we estimated the project was storm pipe and sumps. As the project came to fruition, we felt that this area was a prime opportunity to launch a Green Street effort. Although we took some risk, we took prudent risk, and the financial results in particular were very encouraging. About 2 years prior to the formation of the first LID, we estimated stormwater cost at the equivalent of about $222,000 for this project versus actual results of about $132,000. So we were able to cut the stormwater cost just over half what our original estimate was by using Green Street solutions instead of pipe and sumps. And more importantly, we came up with a much more environmentally sustainable solution. Dave, is there anything you can add from your technical perspective on the infiltration swales?
Well, I'd like to say that this is still a fairly new way of dealing with stormwater. It's the first large-scale infiltration system completed with an LID project, and it appears to be working very well, and we'll be seeing more and more of these in the years to come. And with the collaboration that we've had among the bureaus and the success of the technology, it's very reassuring.
And Bill, can you maybe speak to the efficiencies that the Water Bureau had on this project as well?
Yes, Andrew, thank you. First of all, we did a lot of thinking on how we could reduce the scope of the work by tinkering with the swale issues as well as the depth issue on the water lines. And we were able to reduce the scope of the water relocation adjustment work by about 20% by just working with both BES and PDOT. Also, what we've done is because they have the base information on the project, we used their survey data as well as we've used PDOT's drafting staff to design our water system. That expedited the project. The other one is in the construction contract administration, I should say. We incorporated the water system into the contractor for reducing a lot of the duplicated efforts that could have happened if we didn't do that. And the third area would be that we provided the right amount of crews, construction crews, at the proper time that they're needed in order to get the project moving ahead of the contractor. So in those ways, we really collaborated a lot with both PDOT and BES.
Thank you, Bill. And if we could just switch back to the presentation, The last thing I wanted to show you on this particular slide here is that this project resulted in neighborhood revitalization. You can see that those houses there in the bottom of the picture, that's the new Lentz Landing development that Host Development built. And that area where those houses were built used to be a haven for vagrants and criminal activity. And when we first started putting together the first LID, we had no idea that this housing would come about as a result of this investment in infrastructure. But we've replaced all that criminal activity and vagrant activity with new houses and bringing people into Lentz, the kind of people that you want to have as your neighbors. Just moving on to the next slide here, this is a picture of Southeast Reedway Street east of 104th Avenue, and it was taken about the time that the Lentz Town Center Urban Renewal Area was formed. You can see all that standing water there in the street. So, I mean, we talk about street improvements, but this is as much or more a stormwater improvement project than it is a street improvement project. And this is the same street today. This is a picture I took yesterday when I was out in the field. So as you can see, PDC's financial contribution to this project and their unwavering support for Green Street solutions at the inception of this project have really made a dramatic difference in the neighborhood, and it's obviously an urban renewal success story. So all that standing water that you saw in the previous photo, that swale is sucking up all that stormwater. Moving on to the next slide, this is a close-up view of the infiltration swale. This is an infiltration swale at Southeast 104th and Yukon. You can see that there's a tiny amount of water just inside the swale, but that water there that you see is clean, unlike that lake of muddy brown water that you saw on the previous slide, and who knows what was in that water. So I just wanted to pass along one thing. On September 18th, the contractor worked on the weekend. The property owners were so anxious to be up out of the gravel, the dust, the dirt, and the mud that the contractor worked over the weekend to get the base lift paving done. And on a Saturday, the neighborhood residents held a spontaneous and impromptu block party with the neighborhood children playing football on the newly paved streets and newly constructed sidewalks. And some of the neighborhood residents were literally crying, saying that they couldn't believe how much of a difference had been made in the neighborhood. The police came through to check out what was going on, and they commented that the area was, quote, a whole new neighborhood, unquote, with a lot of places cleaning up. So you can just see remarkable differences there in the neighborhood. And we didn't know there were really any children living in this neighborhood, but once we built the sidewalks and they came out and started playing on the sidewalks, we understood that there were a lot of children in this neighborhood. So in closing, I just wanted to reiterate that this project would not have come to a successful conclusion without the hard work of all the internal folks who collaborated on this project. It would not have been possible without the partnership with the Portland Development Commission, which initiated and funded this project, and ultimately gave us a new Green Street design that we can replicate in many other areas of the city, if not all areas elsewhere in the city. Finally, external stakeholders such as Host Development brought very attractive housing options, such as that picture that you saw, and further underscored the wisdom of the Portland Development Commission to invest its urban renewal resources in this neighborhood. So on a final note of the housekeeping measure, we can do this before or after any property owner testimony, but I'm not really seeing anybody here. We did receive one objection to final assessment from a gentleman who purchased the home on the block where you saw the standing water. He purchased the home there after we had started working on the project. So I'm not sure he was aware of what that street looked like before he bought into the project, but I would ask that council move a motion to overrule the objection to final assessment. Thank you.
Questions?
This looks like really great work. So just wanted to commend PES, Water, Andrew, and PDC for this implementing of Green Streets and showing how dramatically profound it can be and save us infrastructure dollars and achieve very important public goals. So good work. And I would certainly move to overrule the objection.
Second.
Discussion. I would like to ask a question about Mr. Phillips. I saw his letter in our material, and I also saw the possible grants that were available to him, to low-income assistance to PDC, and also failing that to structure the loan over a 20-year period. Were these issues presented to Mr. Phillips so he knew what his options were, as opposed to having to pay the full price for LID?
Yes. Prior to final assessment, we did a very thorough job of communicating to property owners the availability of the low-income grant and recognizing the diversity in this neighborhood. We had some of the material translated into Spanish and Vietnamese. And so we sent out information both on the low-income grant as well as the financing options. I personally don't make the call in terms of the eligibility requirements on the low-income grant. I did do some quick numbers and estimated that even in the absence of qualifying for the low-income grant, Mr. Phillips' monthly payment would probably fall somewhere in the $25 to $30 a month range. I should note that when I had a telephone conversation with Mr. Phillips, he wasn't aware of the low-income grant. Apparently, he hadn't read the materials that had been enclosed with that had been sent to him. And periodically, that happens on projects where you do your best effort to send information to folks, and then for whatever reason, they don't open their mail or read through everything. So,
okay, thank you. Further discussion? Call a vote.
Actually, I think we're going to do a vote on overruling the objection, then it would move to a second reading next week on passage of the ordinance. We have anybody here to testify, do we?
No one signed up.
Okay.
Leonard?
Given that this is the last comment I'll be able to make before next week, I'm really pleased with the collaboration, and particularly in a neighborhood that really needs this kind of help. And it's heartening, and I've been not shy about pointing out shortcomings of the PDC where they exist, but I've also been as vocal in my support of their work out in Lentz, and sometimes under some really tough conditions with some of the neighbors. And so I appreciate all the work everybody's done out here. It is making a difference. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Job. Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Okay, there is no one here who wishes to testify on this matter. Then it's non-emergency and moves to a second reading. What's the date on the second reading?
Will be next week on the 21st. Yes, 21st.
Okay.
9:30 meeting.
We're a few minutes before 10, so why don't we go ahead and start on the regular agenda. And I think that yours is going to take a little longer than just a few minutes, isn't it?
It's going to be longer than a few minutes. I don't.
Well, at times, sometimes the issue with the agenda, regular agenda, after a time certain coming before the time certain, is there's some people, I don't know if that's true, that are actually timing their appearance because it comes later in the agenda.
I'm sure that's true for this one.
Okay, we're in recess.
We have 45 minutes for ours. It shouldn't take more than 45 minutes.
We should then just go ahead and wait till the 10 a.m. I'm understanding from the city attorney that we don't hear those before the time. Okay, then we're recessed for 7 minutes. Council is, is reconvened. Carla, please read the 10 a.m. time, sir.
Item 234, accept the Urban Forest Action Plan as an implementation strategy for the 2004 Portland Urban Forest Management Plan.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. I know that all of council agrees, and I'm sure even those kids upstairs agree, that trees are an important part of the city's infrastructure. We love trees. Portland's very identity as a green city depends on the hundreds of thousands of trees that comprise our urban forest. The urban forest provides benefits to the community that touch all of us personally, but also touch all of the bureaus who help us oversee trees in one capacity or another. Trees impact our environmental health, the sustainability of our region, the economic development in our communities, and the livability of our neighborhoods. We are celebrating today a truly inter-bureau effort, Portland's Urban Forest Action Plan. City bureaus came together with the Urban Forestry Commission to craft the 2004 Urban Forest Management Plan, and they have now come together again to jointly identify priorities and individually take responsibility for implementation of the management plan. As implementation moves forward, an ongoing coordinating team will continue to help the bureaus integrate their work plans and budgets. Meeting the lofty goals of the 2004 Urban Management Plan will take many partners and many years. It is heartening to see the city bureaus stepping up to lead the way. On April 3rd, Portland will be celebrating Arbor Day and will receive an award as a tree city for the 30th year in a row. We take trees seriously, but we can do more, and we need to do more. And I want to thank the Urban Forestry for their leadership. The citizen group has historically been and continues to serve an important role creating opportunities for citizen participation in urban forestry. Several bureau directors are here today to support this plan. Gil Kelly from the Bureau of Planning, Dean Marriott, the Bureau of Environmental Services, and Susan Anderson from the Office of Sustainable Development will have some comments on their bureau's connections to the urban forests, and I'd like to thank them. But now I'd like to introduce Zeri Santner, Parks Director, Ed Washington, Urban Forestry Commission Chair, and Deborah Lev, our Senior Planner, to present the action plan.
Good morning, Mayor, Member of the Council, Zeri Santner, Director of Parks and Recreation. We're very, very pleased to present to you our action plan for implementation of the Urban Forestry Management Plan. As Commissioner Salzman indicated, stewardship of urban forest is one of our core responsibilities for the Bureau of Parks and Recreation. We do that in the Department of City Nature and under the leadership of David McAllister, who's also a city forester. And that department is responsible for maintaining and enhancing the urban canopy in the street right-of-ways, in parks, and also takes leadership in other actions citywide to protect the urban forests in the entire city. I think the importance, as Commissioner Salzman indicated, the importance of urban canopy are very, very clear. First of all, this plan and the action plan that is before you for adoption is consistent with several city goals, primarily the river renaissance, the protection and cleaning of the river. There is a very, very direct correlation between urban forest canopy and our clean rivers, as well as the very healthy and vibrant neighborhoods. Trees make major contribution to both the vitality, the aesthetics, and economic values of our real estates in our neighborhoods. So as Commissioner Salzman mentioned, a few years ago, all the bureaus that have a stake in preserving the urban or enhancing their urban forests came together and developed the Urban Forestry Management Plan. And once again, they were brought together last year to create the action plan that is before you for adoption. And all of these has happened under the guidance of the Urban Forestry Commission. They have been strong partners with us for a long, long time, and their responsibility is not only giving us policy direction on urban forests, but also they serve as an appeal body for tree permits. What you will hear, as Commissioner Saltzman mentioned, there are other bureau directors here who will talk about how this plan fits in with their mission of their individual agencies, as well as how their budgets, requested budget, reflect some of the actions that are recommended with this plan. And I would like to highlight a couple of items that are in our budget that directly relates to implementation of urban forestry management plan. We have requested funding to expand our tree planting in the particularly in the low-income neighborhoods where the canopy is very, very sparse. We've also requested funding for expansion of our tree liaison program to increase our partnership with our community members and increased education, as well as we've requested some funding for enhancement of our webpage as it relates to our urban forestry to communicate with people and to give them information that they need in order to take better care of their trees. So I want to thank the Urban Forestry Commission for their intimate involvement in this process. And the leadership of the Urban Forestry Commission is right now under the very, very capable leadership of Ed Washington, the chair of the commission. And it's a pleasure to introduce Ed Washington.
Thank you, Zeri. Mayor Potter and members of the council, my name is Ed Washington, chair of the Urban Forestry Commission, and I reside at 6242 Northeast 41st Avenue here in Portland, Oregon. From my vantage point, two main events has brought us to this day. The first was the commission's 2005 retreat, where the entire retreat centered on better understanding how the Urban Forestry Management Plan would be implemented and how success would be measured. We understood that we had moved in the 2004 plan from a paradigm of tree management to one of management of the entire urban forest based upon tree canopy targets. My recollection was that there were many, many more questions than answers on how we would do this. The second event that comes to mind was a report to the Urban Forestry Commission by the Sweeney Tree Preservation Committee on the complexity of rules and regulations related to tree protection within the city and the many limitations in process and procedures that reduce tree protection within the city. These two events seemed to galvanize the Commission's interest in developing a work plan to reach the canopy targets outlined in the 2004 management plan. Earlier this year, the Forestry Commission, working with the Parks Bureau, approved the draft action plan that you will see this morning. I would like to thank the members of the Urban Forestry Commission who were active participants in this process, notably Margot Barnett, Francine Correa, Brian Craig, and Christine Carnese, as well as other commissioners Michael McCloskey, John Warner, Terrell Colliers, Dick Pugh, and Michael Harrison. Further, I would like to thank the staff and leadership of Parks and City Nature with special mention for David McAllister, City's Forester, and Deb Lev, Senior Planner. Now I'd like to turn this over to Deb to lead the council to a presentation of the plan. Deb?
Thank you, Ed. I'm Deborah Lev, and here's our presentation. Our action plan is our proposed implementation strategy for the Urban Forestry Management Plan. And just a little bit of history. The first Urban Forestry Management Plan for the city was adopted in 1995 when the Urban Forestry Commission was set up. It was one of the things in their charter that was required by the council that they do the first Urban Forestry Plan. It was updated and published the update in 2004. And what was different about the 2004 plan in this update was that it identified these urban land environments and talked about the conditions and goals in these separate five different categories, residential, commercial, industrial, natural areas, developed parks and open spaces, and transportation rights of way. And another thing that the 2004 plan did was do a great job of reminding us all of the benefits of trees to our community. So in broad measure, those are the environmental benefits. And of course, those include providing wildlife habitat, decreasing erosion, protecting biodiversity, helping to manage stormwater, improving air quality, including reducing greenhouse gases, which help us combat global warming. There are social benefits of trees. They provide windbreak, provide shade. They improve mental and physical health. And there's research that shows that people in hospitals improve more quickly when they have a view of trees out their hospital windows. They improve neighborhoods. Other social research shows that crime rates are lower in neighborhoods that have trees. Reduce heat islands and provide barrier buffers to sound and unwanted sights. And trees, of course, provide economic benefits. They directly reduce cooling costs, reduce flood damage, reduce the need for engineered infrastructure for stormwater. They increase property values. And I thought it was particularly interesting in looking at that research to see that not only do trees on property increase the resale value of a home, but that increase is proportional to the size of the tree. So bigger trees increase the value of the home even more. And lastly, trees and being a city that's thought of as green helps us draw business and tourism to the city. Okay, now there's been a lot of talk already this morning about canopy. Ed talked about the canopy goals, and I just wanted to make sure everyone understood what canopy was. So canopy is if you were in an airplane or you were a bird looking down at the city, as you see here, there's how much of the ground is actually covered by trees and their branches. That's the canopy. And you can see it's different, and we'd have different expectations for canopy in this park from in a residential area, and then again, what's different if it's a commercial or industrial area. So with new technology, actually since this 2004 plan was developed, we've been able to do a pretty good assessment of our overall tree canopy, just everything, all the ground within the limits of the city of Portland. Our tree canopy is about 26%. And I'll show you some comparisons to a couple other cities. These are slightly out-of-date measures, but it gives you a sense of that we're not way at the top and we're not way at the bottom. We're somewhere in the middle of various cities around the country. But I did want to point out an interesting example. This is very recent information from the city of Seattle, and they reported in their draft urban forest management plan that in 1972, Seattle had 40% canopy, and in those intervening years, it's dropped down to 18%, whereas research from done by Joe Peraski of Portland State shows that in that same time period, Portland has stayed the same or even increased a little bit in tree canopy, stayed right around 26%. Now, we'll go through the different urban land environments that were in the 2004 plan just to give you a snapshot of where we are now and what the goals in the plan and the 2004 plan are. So for residential neighborhoods, residential areas, the target was 35 to 40% canopy, and we are currently citywide at 30%, although that varies widely from 61% at the high end in Northwest Portland to only 13% in North Portland. And in residential areas, the canopy comes from both street trees and trees on people's private lots. In commercial and industrial areas, our target is 15% citywide, and currently we're at 7%. In commercial industrial areas, the trees primarily are going to come either from street trees or from parking lot trees. In developed parks and open spaces, our target is 30%, and currently we're at 28%. And rights-of-way canopy, our target is 35% around the city. We're currently at 17%. And I wanted to point out that if you look at this residential street, if you fully planted each one of these opportunities, you'd get pretty much full coverage of that street. But that might be necessary because this rights-of-way also includes our major arterials or even our state freeways like 205 or I-5, where no matter how many trees we plant, we're not going to get coverage over them. And this is not meant to be read, so don't worry about that. But I put it in here to show the complexities. When we started realizing that we needed to do more to implement the 2004 plan, we started hearing from citizens about their discomfort. We look back at this is a diagram from the 2004 plan that shows how trees are related to all these federal mandates up here, the Clean Water Act, Superfund, Endangered Species Act. There's state requirements, there's metro requirements, regional transportation plan, the 2040 plan, the new ones, Title 13, and then there's all the city bureaus. And then we have the River Renaissance visions. And then we have, and since this was done, we have new city initiatives, the Portland Watershed Management Plan. We have our global warming strategy. We have all kinds of things that are coming online, all that relate to trees and connect pretty closely. So here's our urban forest management plan. And so we realized that it wasn't the Urban Forestry Commission or the urban forestry staff and parks or citizens. Nobody could take this on by themselves. We had to reconvene all the bureaus and get back together to work on what the city could do jointly. So here's our implementation strategy team. This is basically the bureaus that were heavily involved in the 2004 update to the plan, got them together again, and came up with an outline for the implementation strategy. And that included developing our goals, outcomes, action plan, and performance measures. So the goals, after looking at what was in the 95 plan, the 2004 plan, what had changed in the city since, we came back to the basic three goals that are in the 2004 plan. We developed outcomes and developed an action plan of what the city bureaus are committing to doing as their responsibility to move ahead these goals. And the performance measures we decided to put off, and we decided after we had the public discussion and came to City Council and got commitment that these are the right performance measures, then we'll go ahead and, as part of the ongoing coordinating committee, we'll go ahead and develop performance measures. So here's the goals from the 2004 plan. They are to protect and enhance Portland's urban forest, and that's all the trees in the city, basically. We want to develop and maintain support for the urban forest. We want to work with the community. And the third is that we want to see equity among all parts of the city in enjoying the benefits of the urban forest. The basic three goals. And then we developed outcomes for each of these goals. So that first goal, to protect and enhance, the first outcome is tree canopy is optimized, meeting stocking and canopy targets. Stocking just means that where there's an opportunity here along the street, for instance, we would have a tree planted. And meeting canopy targets. And that doesn't just mean how many trees we put in. It also means what's the diversity of the trees we're planting. And that means that we're not going to get to our targets for commercial and industrial canopy if we plant little columnar trees like this one where we have room to plant bigger trees. The second outcome is that the city has a comprehensive, consistent, and clear regulatory program for trees. And right now, the tree-related codes are all over the city code, many different bureaus that oversee them, and it causes problems for people who are trying to do the right thing by their trees or understand what the requirements are. Outcome C, the urban forest is enhanced through development and redevelopment. And that gets into when development is happening, doing proper protection of existing trees, and also expanding our urban forest by planting new trees when we have new development. Okay, goal two, maintaining and developing support for the urban forest. The first outcome would be stewardship of the urban forest is shared by citizens, agencies, non-governmental organizations, and businesses. Outcome B, the public has a strong awareness of tree benefits and ecosystem health issues, and education opportunities are abundant, as shown by this neighborhood tree liaison class. And the third outcome is that stable resources support the urban forest, and those are resources to actually do maintenance of trees where the city has taken that responsibility, also resources for education and supporting community efforts. And our third goal, which gets at maximizing the benefits for all residents of the city, first outcome is that street trees are equitably distributed throughout the city. They are not now, by the way. Outcome B, the urban forest contributes to the health and well-being of all Portlanders. So that has to do with the aesthetic benefits of trees, even, you know, getting the benefits of edible fruit. And the last outcome there is improved watershed health, including water quality, stream flow, all those watershed health goals from our urban forest. Okay, so once again, this was developed by a partnership with bureaus. It's because it was the bureaus who were being asked to step up and take leadership in saying what each bureau would be doing and what we would do collectively, what the city of Portland's going to do to move the plan ahead. But to really implement this, we can't just rely on the city. We're going to be working with closely with the Urban Forestry Commission and a number of community and nonprofit groups, some of whom are in the room here today. So action plan elements. We have actions to achieve each of these outcomes. For each action, there's a lead bureau identified and the supporting bureaus who will be working on it. Shows you a priority for achieving that outcome, and we used that in a particular way that I wanted to explain. The priority is not how important the bureau thinks it is, not how important the community thinks it is, but it's really how important that action is in achieving the outcome under which it's listed. So we might have a compelling reason to do something that's not the highest priority for achieving that outcome, and we'll go ahead and do it anyway. And the time frame, we have early actions. Those are the ones that the bureaus are saying, we're going to step up and do this. We're going to put it into our work plan. We know how we can get it done in the next, at least initiate it within the next few years. There's other items that are listed as 5 or 10-year items. And even though they may be high priority, they're listed as 5 or 10-year items if we haven't identified the resources to do them. And that might be allocating staff time. It might be actually finding additional funding to do it. Before I move on, and I wanted to point out this illustration because it's just illustrates what we're talking about and the benefits of trees. So this is in the 1990s in the Kenton neighborhood, and after a tree planting, you can see how much more inviting that commercial neighborhood is. So I wanted to give you a couple examples from the action plan. So high priority early actions. These are things that we're planning to move ahead with, are establishing a website with information about trees and also targeting low-income and low-canopy neighborhoods for additional tree planting, being more formal about that in our process than we have been. Some examples of high priority funding needed actions are to review and revise the tree-related codes for clarity and consistency. That's a huge item, really important, but it's going to take more resources. Another example would be developing and adopting standards and best management practices for selection, planting, and care of urban trees. So just some examples from the action plan. You'll also see, which isn't mentioned here, you'll also see continuing actions. There's a couple things that were pulled out, things we're already doing that we want to continue and probably expand. And those would, an example of that would be dealing with invasive species. Okay, so we've taken this draft action plan. It was put together. It was reviewed by a lot of folks. We did presentations to a number of boards and commissions and community groups, the citywide parks team, citywide land use chairs, planning commission, stormwater advisory committee, sustainable development commission among them. It's been posted on the Portland Parks website for a couple months, and during that time there was there's about 3,000 individual times that the page with the urban forest management plan and this new action plan was looked at. And the action plan was revised based on comments that were received, mostly from the groups that we went to. And the final draft action plan was approved by the Urban Forestry Commission, and now it's coming to you. So our next steps are to continue this interbureau coordinating committee. And one of their first steps is to three performance measures. And one of the things we found out when we started looking at performance measures, such as more refining the canopy targets and how to measure it and how often to measure it, is that measuring canopy is tricky. The technology is tricky. You can't necessarily see changes year to year. And it also intersects with the performance goals that are being established for river renaissance, for watershed health, for carbon reduction goals. And so we want to get it right, and we want to work with all those different groups. So those are the kinds of things that the coordinating committee will be working on. And then you will be hearing an annual progress report on how we're doing on our plan from the Urban Forestry Commission. So thank you very much.
So thank you. If there's questions of this panel, otherwise we have three bureau directors that will also come up and discuss how the action plan fits within their bureaus and their budget request and things like that. Okay, so that I'll call up next Dean Marriott, Gil Kelly, and Susan Anderson.
Good morning, Mayor, members of Council. Dean Marriott, Environmental Services Director. We're very pleased to be supporting this action plan. We played a significant role in the effort. We're very pleased also with the collaborative effort put together by the Parks Department. Protecting and enhancing the urban forest, as you've heard, is very critical to protecting a clean water. So we're very interested in it from that perspective. We're committed to help implement the action plan. We have already assigned a staff person to continue to work on the Bureau of Planning's multi-bureau tree initiative, which I'm sure you'll hear more about in just a moment. And while we continue to participate in those efforts, we're also out busy planting trees. Our revegetation program, which has been active around the city in removing invasive species and planting native species, just last year along the Columbia Slough planted 21,000 trees. We have an ongoing relationship with Friends of Trees and Solve, and just last year we, with that partnership, together with them, planted 1,000 street trees in Portland. We also have a stewardship program, which is in our budget and continues to be funded with your support, where we reach out and make small grants to neighborhood friends groups, who many of whom are active in revegetation programs that would support this plan. So we look forward to continuing with our good working relationship with the Parks Bureau and the Planning Bureau and the other bureaus in the city that are working on this. And I can certainly tell you that having trees in a city makes a big difference in water quality, and we hope to continue that effort. Thank you.
I would just point out that the work you guys did between, I think it's 45th and about 35th and the Springwater Corridor.
Yes.
What are those boundaries? Where you have the sewer work.
Right. I know.
45th to, I don't know what the street number is, but it's along the Johnson Creek.
Right, Johnson Creek area.
It's just absolutely striking for people that use that regularly, and I do the tree plantings and the reclamation work. It has got to be just one of, it's gone from a place that people were frightened to walk through alone to one of the most outstanding natural areas in the city. It's just fabulous. So,
thank you.
I told you before how impressed I was, and in this context, I thought it's important to just point that out.
Thanks, Commissioner. And you'll actually see more projects coming your way in Johnson Creek watershed in the future.
So, that's excellent.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Good morning, Council. Gil Kelly, Planning Director. Like Dean, I just want to express my support and interest in continuing the work on this. It's been a very good collaboration. I wanted to thank Zeri and David and Deb for that. I just wanted to make a footnote here that I had the pleasure of serving on a panel in the nation's capital last year about greening D.C. and greening the nation's cities. And some of the attributes that Deb referred to are now scientifically and economically established. There really are tangible, enduring benefits to tree cover, tree canopy, not just with respect to the environment and ecosystem services, which we've sort of intuitively believed all along here in Portland. Those are now well established by the scientific community, but also in the areas of learning, of healing, and of economic benefit. Those have really, I think, now become fairly well established. And I think the group that was pulled together of scientists and designers and planners and economists was very helpful in establishing that benchmark. So I think this plan is right dead on in terms of that. And I'm happy to learn from the presentation today that we haven't degraded our canopy numbers too much over the last couple of decades like some of the other cities. But I think as we begin to infill the city more intensively, that's going to be even more under pressure. So I think this is the right set of actions to carry through. I wanted to pick up on two points that Zeri mentioned. It's linked to the River Renaissance, so we make that clear. And also it's linked to general neighborhood livability work that the Planning Bureau is engaged in. With regard to the River Renaissance, the River Renaissance strategy and vision did anticipate developing tree canopy outcome measures and performance measures, and we're very happy that those outcomes have been established now as part of a multi-bureau process, and we look forward to the performance measures being established for that because of their importance to the rivers and the streams. Behaviorally, if you will, there's a link as well to the River Renaissance in the sense that those measures are really critical for holding all of us accountable and being the guides to our investment and program decisions over the coming years, as well as the partnership that's been established and expressed in this work so far, I think is just right in line with what we're trying to achieve there. The second piece, I think, relates to the action item that Deb showed you at the near the end of the presentation, which had to do with that large unfunded a priority project, which is something that's come to be known as the, I'm going to refer to my notes here so I get the working title right, the Comprehensive Tree Policy and Code Review and Update. That is a substantial amount of work. It will involve changes to the city's comprehensive plan and about six different codes, manuals, and criteria that various bureaus use in one way or another in tree policy. Those have to be rationalized, and they also have to be more directly linked to what our goals are here in the Urban Forest Management Plan. So at the urging of Parks and Planning staff and our own Citizen Budget Committee, I've forwarded a proposal into the budget process for consideration for that to be funded in the next fiscal year. It had been in the five-year action time frame. We've gotten a lot of indication from citizens and a variety of stakeholders that ought to be advanced. So I wanted to let you know that that's already in the hopper in terms of a proposed action for one-time funding, a two-year program for limited-term staff and expenses to carry that work out. We would involve the bureaus listed as well as BDS will be a critical partner in that effort. So just wanted to, again, lend my support and enthusiasm for the follow-through actions that are listed here.
Susan Anderson, Director of the Office of Sustainable Development. I want to thank Parks for the really cooperative effort of having all the different bureaus involved in this, and I look forward to its implementation. In particular, there's two areas where OSD can offer some assistance and some technical expertise. The first relates to trees and the sun. The sun in terms of solar access for heating and cooling and electricity generation. As we increase the urban canopy, we need to pay special attention to where and what kind of trees are planted. For example, we do want appropriate deciduous trees to shade the west sides of buildings during hot summer afternoons to reduce heating loads. We all know what it's like when you have a great tree on the west side of your house on a hot summer day and how important that is for cooling your house. But we don't want large trees shading quality solar access on the south side of buildings. This is especially important as we continue to promote the use of solar energy throughout the community to reduce the use of other conventional energy resources. Some of you may have even considered doing solar in the past on your home for solar water heating or other things and found out that there is a large tree right in front of your house. We have an opportunity to have great trees, but we also have an opportunity to have great solar, but we need to do good planning to do both of those things. I think what Gil just mentioned in terms of working on code issues, it'll be really important that planning and OSD and Parks work together on that. A second area of interest for OSD is the connection between the urban canopy and food production. I'm talking about fruit and nut-bearing trees. This may sound like a silly sort of back to the 70s idea, but it isn't. Quality local food production is an important issue. It's an important issue from an economic development point of view to keep our dollars local, but also from a strategic point of view in the area we were talking about last week in terms, in terms of peak oil. As we look a couple of decades down the road, food prices are going to go up substantially more than some other goods because transportation is such a large part of the price of food. So I think it's important, as you know, it's not the answer to these issues, it's not the answer to local food production, but it's a part of the package. And as we look in each area of the city, we need to think more sustainably, and this is one of the issues where we can do that. That said, we do know that fruit trees everywhere, they don't belong in every park on every street corner. They do have some problems, and we need to make sure we deal with those. Thanks again to Parks for coordinating this, and we look forward to helping with implementation. Thanks.
Thank you. That's it for invited. Looks like there's people probably signed up to testify.
How many people do we have signed up?
We have seven people, but we have Rebecca Esau for Director Scarlett. Did you want to take her?
Oh,
please come forward.
Good morning. I'm Rebecca Esau from the Bureau of Development Services. Paul Scarlett asked me to be here on his behalf this morning to speak for the Bureau of Development Services. I'd like to say BDS has been at the table participating with the other agencies to develop this action plan. We're very supportive of the goals of the project and excited to see it being implemented. Being at the implementation side of things, we experience problems with the current regulations. They're very complex and spread among many titles in the city regarding tree planting and tree preservation. And we look forward to working with the Bureau of Planning and other stakeholders to get the regulatory framework related to trees straightened out. In order to implement the BDS action items, some additional funding will be needed. We will be working with Parks and our respective budget packages to get those requests to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Please call the first three people.
That would be Scott Fogarty, Mike Hauk, and Amanda Fritz.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
My name is Scott Fogarty. I'm Executive Director with Friends of Trees. And it's really a pleasure to be here today and to hear so many bureau heads adopting sort of what we've been preaching for quite a while in Portland, and that is the importance of our canopy cover and the importance that trees provide to the city of Portland from environmental to economic. As you know, Friends of Trees is primarily a community-building organization, and we do this through our tree planting events, which are very well attended. I know the mayor's been out this year to help plant with us. And we have been recognized across the country for these efforts, not just Friends of Trees, but the City of Portland. We jointly won an award this year from the Conference of Mayors for our efforts at keeping the canopy alive and vibrant in the city. And for many, many other reasons, we have been invited to be on a national consortium to help come up with further policies that help our citizens understand the importance of the urban forest. And from Friends of Trees' perspective, we fully support this action plan. It furthers the public-private relationship that we have with the City of Portland and with individual bureaus in our two programs. We do have a street tree program as well as a natural area restoration program. So we have worked with just about all of the agencies who are up here. We also have a building that we are trying to make as sustainable as possible, and so we are living what we preach, so to speak. I encourage you to take a look at this action plan and support it as much as you can, and Friends of Trees, again, supports it. Thank you.
Thanks for what you do for our community.
Thank you.
Mayor Potter, Commissioners, my name is Mike Hauk, and I'm here today representing the Urban Green Spaces Institute. I don't see anybody else from the Park Board. I will put that hat on for a moment and simply say that the Park Board has had a presentation as well and is fully supportive of this plan, but I am today representing the Urban Green Spaces Institute. We are pleased that the plan explicitly recognizes, as Deb Lev pointed out on page 12, the red star that she referred to, recognizes that this, in fact, is a multi-bureau undertaking, even though the